The Second Worst Trip to Mordor Ever Taken. Written by Artax Lives and read by Flower Parish. This is a Stranger Things fic, rated for teen and up audiences, featuring the relationship Steve Harrington / Eddie Munson. Summary. Steve takes the boys and Eddie on a trip to the comic book shop for new D&D stuff. It doesn't go well. Notes. Trigger warning for an unintentional forced outing and some mistaken homophobia. Also, I am aware that the Barbarian as its own class came out in 1985 in Unearthed Arcana, which Eddie actually uses in Season 4 at his session, but I wanted to use it here, so shh. Just suspend your disbelief, and also, this is not what the Barbarian figurine looked like, but I'm doing what I want. The Goliath Barbarian I play in my game is blue, and there's nothing anyone can do to stop me.
Not a white knight upon a fiery steed. Late at night I toss and turn and I dream of what I need.
I need a hero. I shout out for a hero till the end of the night. I pray he be hale, winged of heel, and newly returned from the fight.
I need a hero. I shall hold out for a hero till the morning light. He must be assured, ere true to his word, with a wit that will thrill and excite. Thrill and excite.
This was absolutely not how Steve had planned on spending his first Saturday free in a month. In all honesty, he hadn't had any real plans except to not work today and not drive children around to do more fun activities than he himself was doing. In fact, he might have just laid on his couch in his goddamn underwear, drinking beer and listening to depressing sad girl music, while he resolutely did not pine after Eddie fucking Munson. But no, here he was, sober and dressed, driving the fucking Rugrats and Eddie fucking Munson all the way to stupid Indy because there was some kind of Dungeons & Dragons emergency that couldn't fucking wait, and Eddie's van was broken down. Again. When was one of these gremlins going to turn 16 and become the group chauffeur? No. No. He would not let himself feel melancholy over that. He didn't care if they were growing up, and he didn't care if he stopped being their babysitter. He didn't. Fine, he did. He just needed a break from both wrangling the kids and looking at Eddie's beautiful face for one damn day. I'm telling you, there's gonna be a new race in it. I can feel it, Dustin squeaked from the back seat, where he was wedged illegally with his other three no longer children-sized best friends. In the passenger seat, Eddie was turned sideways, knee cocked over the middle console and occasionally brushing against Steve's thigh. Au contraire, Dusty Bun, it's got to be a new class, another fighter type. There's too many fucking magic users. That sounded familiar. Steve recalled them having this conversation during a session a few weeks ago. Something about all missing some new book that came out, and issues of some kind of magazine or comic book with updates, because they were busy saving the world. Says the bard. Mike rolled his eyes and shoved his knee into the back of Steve's seat. Wheeler, get your goddamn bony-ass knees out of my back or you're riding home in the trunk, Steve ground out, again. It's not my fault, there's not enough room back here. He wriggled around where he was wedged next to Will, and Steve caught Will's blush in the rearview mirror. Interesting. I'll have you know, that backseat has plenty of room for all kinds of activities, Steve leered. It was a lie, though. He had always snuck into girls' rooms or had them over to his big empty house. He'd never had sex in the Bimmer. Gotten head, yes, but that wasn't in the back seat. There was a chorus of gross and disgusting. And then Mike said, I swear to God, if you're saying that I'm riding around in a spot you had sex with my sister in, I will throw the fuck up right here. Hey, hey, hey. First off, we don't ever name names of people we have had sex with. That's locker room bullshit and not okay, Steve shouted over them, and then backtracked with, and no, I did not have sex with your sister, or actually anyone, in this car. I was fucking with you. A chorus of, yeah, right, and no one believes that, followed up, but Eddie tucked his head into the seat rest and waggled his eyebrows at Steve. You mean this car is unchristened? Harrington, I'm surprised at you. He tugged on a lock of his hair and fluttered his eyelashes, but then threw his head back and laughed when Steve stammered in response. One of these fucking days, Steve was gonna call Eddie's bluff with the flirting. Just as soon as he figured out this whole being bisexual thing. He didn't know how gay people did it. It would be helpful to tell who was gay and who was safe to tell. Why didn't everyone wear a sign or a pin? Though, he guessed that would get them all beaten up, so maybe not. He told Robin, and if Will's blush meant what he thought it did, he might tell Will. In the back seat, Dustin opened a map across his and Lucas's laps. Okay, Steve, you're gonna want to take the exit just over the bridge, and then veer right for what looks like 2 miles, take a left, then a right, go for another maybe 3 miles, and it should be right there. Rolling his eyes, Steve said, if you get us lost, I'm gonna be so pissed. Relax. Not all those who wander are lost, Steve, he replied in a sing-song voice, shaking out the map and grinning back at Steve in the rearview mirror. These fucking kids. I guess you were wrong about wandering and getting lost. What did I say? Steve, minor setback. We have plenty of time before the store closes, Dustin assured him as he flattened the map out on the hood. Dustin spun the map to the left and then again all the way back, squinting up at the line of buildings and the street signs around them while muttering to himself. Next to him, Lucas ran a hand down his own face. Why, Hem? He'd wanted one day off. One day of no kids and no work. One day where he didn't have to school his features and watch his every word and reaction while engaging with Eddie. Every time he thought he had this crush under control, Eddie would do that thing where he said something flirty and then pull his hair across his mouth and Steve would just... well, he'd fucking melt. Like the vanilla ice cream always seemed to when he'd worked at Scoops Ahoy. It was pathetic. It was embarrassing. It was unrequited. And he knew it. He did. There were lots of times that Steve thought that Eddie was gay, but so many more when he would swear the other man was straight. And even if they both liked guys, that didn't mean Eddie was interested in Steve. Eddie wore leather jackets, slept till noon, and listened to metal music. Steve wore polo shirts and jogged at 7 a.m. while listening to whatever popular music he'd heard on the radio. They didn't have anything in common except loving these brats and their shared upside-down trauma. And Eddie had been unconscious for the most traumatic part of it. Steve had been wholly and completely awake as he'd carried Eddie's leaking body back to the gate and hoisted him up. It had looked way worse than it was. He'd needed a transfusion, but the scars honestly just looked like Eddie had been hit with buckshot. A lot of buckshot. Buckshot that came in patterns of 4, because that was how many fangs the bats had had in their tiny, greedy mouths. Steve had his own, just less of them. The blood loss and the adrenaline crash after Eddie had decided to be a hero had looked a hell of a lot like death. So much that Dustin was still not over the trauma of it. Not that he or Steve would ever tell Eddie how often Dustin still called Steve at 3 a.m. in tears after another nightmare about Eddie dying in his arms. Steve would have to remind him, in detail, of how they'd saved Eddie, remind him that Eddie was safe at home with Wayne. Promise. They'd never talked about it with Eddie, but sometimes Steve would see Dustin touch Eddie's shoulder or arm and let out a breath, like he'd needed to make sure Eddie was real and alive. Max had woken up a week after they'd defeated Vecna. Eleven had gone in to check on her, said she was back in her own mind but was still asleep there too, slowly healing. She and Elle were attached at the hip these days. Max's hips were still in a wheelchair most of the day, but their friendship was stronger than ever. It was good for them. Max had needed someone who understood her guilt and loss, her anger, and Elle needed that too. No one had realized just how much Elle was carrying until Vecna had almost turned her inside out. Even she hadn't known that she was suffering, because she'd never not been suffering. As a group, there was a lot of bonding past their original trauma bonding going on these days. Which is how he'd found himself here. Lost in Indianapolis on his first free Saturday with the 4 Dorketeers and the guy who'd been starring in way too many of Steve's fantasies lately. Apparently, they needed something for their game so desperately that they'd sent Will, Will, who they all knew Steve had a serious soft spot for, to ask if he could please, please, Steve, drive the party to get it? The kid was too sweet, too genuine, even after all that had happened to him. Steve couldn't deny him anything that brought him joy. Henderson, you're like a genius or something. Why can't you read a map? Eddie asked, shrugging off his leather jacket and tossing it through the passenger window. And really, why was he even wearing it? It was summer. Steve was sweating in his skimpy Johnny Depp Gets Killed in Nightmare on Elm Street outfit, a too-short football jersey left over from his freshman year, the only year he'd played football, and a pair of the shorts he jogged in every morning. Johnny had worn sweatpants, but it was too hot for that, and besides, how was Steve supposed to know if Eddie was attracted to him if he didn't show off some skin? It showed off his scars, but he didn't actually care. He was proud of those, thought they looked pretty badass if he was honest. He did feel a bit self-conscious that it was a little more slutty than anything he would normally wear, but, as Steve had been reminded plenty of times, it wasn't his brains that people were attracted to. If a robin had been around to watch him change his outfit 7 times that morning, she'd never let him live it down. Whatever. She was mooning over Nancy these days, so she had no room to talk. From the hood of the car, Dustin and Lucas argued over which lines on the map were the right lines and totally ignored Eddie's question. Eddie looked back at where Steve was leaning back against the car. His eyes definitely strayed to the 3 inches of naked waist between the shorts and jersey before he cocked his head towards the car and asked, "You got hair ties in here for the girls still, babysitter?" Turning to lean sideways and prop his elbows on the trunk, knowing full well that would stretch the 3-inch gap to like 5 or 6 inches, Steve smirked. Hair ties aren't just for girls if you need one. But yes, there should be a few in the glove compartment. Eddie leaned in through the open window, popping the glove box and rummaging around for a few seconds before pulling back out triumphantly. Steve quickly averted his eyes from where Eddie's Iron Maiden shirt had ridden up, exposing an inch of alabaster skin and scars to match his own along his waist. "You want me to braid it for you?" Steve asked with a huge grin. Eddie looked surprised. "You can braid?" The answer to that was yes. Elle and Erica had taught him to braid Max's hair during those first few weeks when she was still recovering and her bones didn't work too well yet. But none of them liked to be reminded of how close they'd come to losing her. Instead, he waggled his eyebrows and flirted, "I can do a lot of things you don't know about." He tried at least. But Mike fucking Wheeler, ever the cockblock. More now since there were 2 cocks involved. "Yes, I'm sure you have so many hidden talents, Steve," Mike snorted and then chortled. "They all involve getting beat up or dumped." Before Steve could do anything more than be embarrassed by the awful truth of that, Dustin shouted, "Aha, found us. Let's go, people. We're losing daylight." They were not. It was only early afternoon, and it was summer, so the days were too damn long. "Great. Get the fuck in the car so I can get this over with," Steve groused, almost wishing he could leave Mike in Indianapolis. They rushed around to pile back into the car, and when Steve slid into the driver's seat, he deeply regretted the length of his shorts. Why had he gone with the leather interior? His thighs were on fire. Glancing over to see if Eddie had seen his quick intake of breath, he did a double take. Eddie had piled his hair on top of his head in a disheveled bun, leaving the column of his neck on display. Steve wanted to lean in and lick the slightly sweaty skin under Eddie's ear. He shook himself. "Fuck. Get a grip, Harrington." "Okay, Henderson, where am I going?" he demanded. Shut down. The store was shut down. There was a forwarding address, but now they were back to arguing over the best route across town to get to the new location. Fucking Christ. This time, Steve was leaning against the building in the small square of shade. He'd beckoned Will over with him since the kid wanted nothing to do with the others bickering, and he could probably use a break from Mike. Knowing they both had hopeless crushes just made his soft spot for Will even more squishy. They could relate in more ways than Steve had thought. Neither of them had expected to find a kindred spirit in each other, but as soon as the town had settled back down, they'd found themselves gravitating towards the back of the crowd together. Neither really liked the spotlight, since they'd both spent too much time in it already. They discovered other similarities along the way, too. They both had fathers who mocked them for being sensitive, for being kind and gentle. They were both forced to be responsible latchkey kids at an early age. They'd both been lost and alone. Will had people who loved him and tore the town and another dimension apart to find him, whereas Steve had had to find his own way. But Steve was guessing now that they also both liked boys and felt alone because of it. Steve had Robin and Will probably had Jonathan, but Steve thought maybe it was time to bring Will into his circle. Let him know he wasn't alone. "This is basically what happens in-game as well," Will said softly, watching Lucas and Dustin argue and Mike do nothing helpful but bitch, while Eddie hyped them all up and left General Havoc in his wake. "I can see that happening," Steve sighed, because even though he pretended not to understand their game, he did. He'd watched sessions and knew that they all put a lot of themselves into their characters. Too much, in some cases. "So, you sure about this whole Mike thing?" Instead of being shocked or denying it, Will gave him a rueful half-smile. "You sure about this whole Eddie thing?" Steve snorted, not surprised that Will had noticed. "I'd ask if I'm that obvious, but none of these knuckleheads ever shut up long enough to observe anything, or they'd see right through both of us, I'm sure." Will smiled over at him, and Steve smiled back, making a mental note to take the kid for a haircut before Joyce got a hold of him again. Over by the car, Lucas turned the map 180 degrees, and Dusty turned it back with a glare. Eddie had popped the trunk at some point and was digging into something. Steve should probably be concerned, but the only things back there were emergency supplies and his nail bat. So either the guy would come out looking for a fight, or with three neon pink band-aids in some place he didn't need them. Mike looked like he was sulking as he leaned on the roof of the car, pretending not to look at Will and Steve. Huh. Also interesting. Eddie slammed the trunk, placing his splayed fingertips on it, and then theatrically shouted, "Harrington, you are hereby relieved of your babysitting duties." "Sweet, can I go home then?" Steve asked as, next to him, Will swallowed what could only have been a giggle. "Absolutely not. You are still the chauffeur." He steepled his fingers together, leaping up onto a bus stop bench, which Steve probably shouldn't be parked in front of. "Gentlemen, the babysitter did not bring any snacks or refreshments. I require sustenance, and I believe we all need a short rest before we continue our quest." "Yes," Mike crowed, tilting his head back and shouting, "To the tavern!" "What? We're not going to a fucking tavern," Steve mumbled, shaking his head as Eddie leapt off the bench and ran around the car, tapping each boy on the head and yelling, "Duck, duck, duck, goose," landing on Mike last. Mike, who hesitated only for a moment, chased after Eddie. They ran around the car twice before Eddie launched himself into one of the backseat open windows. He didn't quite make it. Everything from his knees down was sticking straight out the window. Steve rushed forward, using his hands like claws to grab just above the underside of Eddie's knees, where he himself was ticklish. Eddie screeched with laughter and indignation, trying to pull his legs into the car fully while laughing and wriggling under Steve's hands. "Harrington, you bastard!" Eddie finally managed to get both legs away from Steve's grasp and curled himself into a ball in the back seat, trying to catch his breath. "You absolute asshole! How dare you?" But he was grinning wildly. That grin felt like a gauntlet had been thrown down, that Steve should probably be watching his back for retaliation. Was he a masochist that he welcomed it? Welcomed whatever revenge Eddie felt he should dole out, as long as it meant there would be touching. Well, so be it. Consider the gauntlet thrown. He grinned back before making his way around to get back in the driver's seat, and then find some place to eat that did not serve beer or ale, or whatever the fuck nerds drank while they roleplayed. Each table at the old-fashioned diner had a mini jukebox on it. Eddie dumped a handful of quarters in front of theirs and told the kids not to play any Elvis. So, of course, the first song they played was Hound Dog. Bickering ensued. Steve smiled serenely because it was damn nice to see them annoying someone else for a change. After a few minutes, a tired-looking waitress came over to take their order. These nerds can get a little loud. I'll try to keep them in line, but please, Betty, is it? If we're too loud or anything, let me know, okay? Steve said politely, once everyone had ordered basically the same burger and fries. She patted his hand and smiled gratefully before heading off to put in their order. Was the song so inspiring you had to flirt with the waitress, you hound dog? Eddie grinned teasingly, tucking his fists under his chin and leaning across the wide circular booth they were in. They were on the outside ends, so there was a good distance of table between them. Steve could barely hear Eddie over the brats and the awful song. Nah, my dad always treated waitstaff like they were less than he was. I figure it's the least I can do to try to make up for assholes like him. He shrugged. She looks tired and overworked. Probably underpaid and undertipped. Just common decency to not let this troop be the worst part of her day. Eddie still had his hair pulled up, but there were a few strands loose. He pulled those across the lower half of his face. They hid nothing this time, so Steve saw Eddie's bashful smile, and it sent up a swarm of butterflies in his stomach. You'd think you'd be out of surprises to throw at me by now, but nope. Here we are again. Gathering his courage to show his hand at least a little, Steve leaned back against the backrest, stretching his legs out under the table, making sure the toe of his sneaker brushed Eddie's leg as he crossed them at the ankles. Oh, I'm full of surprises, Munson, he said, with a lifted eyebrow. Eddie didn't flinch at the touch or the blatant flirting, instead following suit to lean back in his seat, stretching his legs out on either side of Steve's to bracket them. They weren't touching, but Steve could feel the heat from them, so Eddie must be able to feel Steve's. Turning toward the jukebox, Eddie waved a finger and said, "Play A14 next, or you'll roll at disadvantage next session." "What? That's an abuse of power," Mike whined. "Mike, they're his quarters," Will reminded him gently. "He can request one song, especially since you're the one who picked the Elvis song." "Fine," Mike grumbled as he stamped down the matching button for A and then 14. "Be My Baby" by the Ronettes started to play. Eddie turned back to Steve but didn't say anything. He just stared. Steve swallowed. He reminded himself to breathe and not get a damn boner because these shorts hid nothing. "Man, I can't believe there's a release of a new something and we still don't know. This is horseshit," Dustin grouched, waving his wrist in front of Eddie and pointing at his watch. Eddie looked over at the kid, but it did nothing to slow him down, let alone stop him. "We should already have that in our hands by now, but you had to stop for food." "Blame Harrington. You know he always keeps his backpack of snacks. I didn't eat breakfast because I figured I'd snag a granola bar from him," Eddie admitted, not looking back at Steve. "He's got a point, Steve. How are we supposed to count on you as the group mom if you don't bring snacks and drinks?" Dustin shook his head in disbelief. "It's bad enough you don't know how to get where you're taking us." Steve sat up, bringing his feet back and forgetting completely about the possible flirting that Eddie may or may not have been doing with their ankles. "Are you fucking serious right now? I'm not your mom, and I did not agree to be the group mom." "You kinda did," Lucas interjected. "You said, well, if no one else is going to mother you little bastards, I guess I'm going to have to do it. So, unless you want to abandon us," he pouted. "As someone whose mom actually did abandon them, I can tell you that abandoning us will give us the kind of trauma that presents itself in deviant ways later in life." Eddie turned his doe eyes on Steve. "And do you want to be responsible for our deviant behavior?" "Deviant behavior," Steve mouthed, unsure what it was supposed to be a hint at. To the kids, he said, "Fine, I'm the group mom. And I forgot snacks. Sue me." He spread his hands like, "What are you gonna do?" Just then, Betty showed up with a few of their burgers, a busboy following her with the rest. Everyone dug in, but Steve couldn't help but wonder if that had been Eddie flirting, or if he was just being Eddie like usual. He'd taken the distraction of Dustin easily enough. Maybe he thought Steve was gonna back down or brush it off like he normally did. Liking boys was confusing. There needed to be a manual or something. He had no idea what he was doing. Onward to Mordor! I thought Mordor was a bad place. Steve was pretty sure he remembered one of them calling the Upside Down Mordor at one point. Is that what the nerd shop is called? Why would they name it that? Dustin sighed. Steve could almost hear him rolling his eyes. Because, Steve, D&D rules us all, and so does the One Ring. God, you guys are such dorks, Steve replied, clicking his seatbelt into place. Dustin prattled off directions again, and Steve pulled back onto the road. After a few blocks, Mike and Dustin started arguing. The road they were on came to a dead end, and Steve ground his teeth. He put his hand on the back of Eddie's headrest to help him twist around and face all four of them so they knew he was serious. If you all don't shut the fuck up about your hobbits or hobnobs or whatever the fuck you're arguing about instead of giving me directions, I will drive us home and throw my car keys in the lake. Now, no one talks until we get there. Dustin, what road was I supposed to turn on? Bernie, you were supposed to take a right on Bernie somewhere back there, Dustin answered, appropriately cowed.
Sorry, Steve.
Lucas and Will both said at the same time. Steve took several deep breaths while reversing into an alley so he didn't have to make a 6 or 7 point U-turn in the too small space. They rode in silence except for Dustin's directions, Mike's occasional half-word followed by a grunt when either Will or Lucas must have poked him to shut him up, and Eddie's barely maintained laughter. Steve refused to look at him because he knew the twinkling eyes would set him off, and then they'd never get to this stupid store because the boys would all be shouting again. Pulling into the parking lot, Steve let out a big breath. I'm sorry I yelled at you guys. Thank you for being quiet. Thanks for bringing us, Steve. We know it was a lot to ask, Will immediately piped up, probably hoping to set an example for the others. They chorused thank yous as they all climbed out and ran toward the store. Steve could feel Eddie's eyes on him. Turning, he asked, You think I was mean? Eddie blinked a few times, brow furrowed. Steve, I think you're too nice. Except for Will, they're all little assholes, and you let them get away with murder. I would know, as their satanic leader. Steve scoffed, climbing out of the car himself. I know you too well for that now, Munson. Don't feed me any of that satanic crap. I've seen you catch spiders in your hands and take them outside instead of killing them. He reached the door and held it open for Eddie, who'd followed him out of the car. The store wasn't well air-conditioned, but at least it was cooler than outside. The walls were lined with board games and little figurines. There were boxes of comic books on several tables, and the entire back wall looked like things he recognized from the sessions he'd let them play at his house. There was a shelf of the books they all seemed to have, and several dragon figures on display. Eddie bounded over to where the group was huddled around something. The shopkeeper was bent over the counter to look at it, too. Everyone sounded excited and happy. I told you, Eddie crowed. A new fighter class, barbarian. Damn, we could have used one of those on this campaign. He smiled at the skinny guy behind the counter. Wish I'd made the run out here when you first got your shipment in. Thanks for holding this one for us. The guy at the counter stammered out something about it being no problem, while his eyes flicked from the book the boys were exclaiming over to where Steve stood in the middle of the store with his hands on his hips. What? Did he think Steve was going to steal something? The only thing he wanted in the store was Eddie, and so far, he was going home empty-handed. He wandered over to a display case to look at the little figures inside of it. Some of them were painted, some were not. There was one that said barbarian on it. It looked familiar, basically a shirtless jock carrying a big club with a spiky ball on the end, like a fancy nail bat. Maybe there was something for him in this game after all. Can I help you? The store employee asked, swallowing a few times like Steve had seen guys do when Tommy cornered them in the bathroom to harass them. Oh, fuck, the football jersey. He didn't think Steve was going to steal something. He was afraid of him. Well, that capped it. Yeah, actually, can I see the barbarian? And do you sell dice here for... God, it was going to kill him to have to say it the correct way, but he smiled anyway. Dungeons and Dragons? The guy looked surprised, pleasantly so, though, and he nodded, returning the smile as he reached into the case, took out the figure and an unopened box of one. Steve held it up for a closer look. It was made of some kind of metal, shirtless with pants and what looked like fur boots, thick legs braced apart for a fight. The stance was one he himself had been in many times, both on the court and while fighting monsters. You can buy a pack of starter dice, we only have them in red, or the single dice are over there in the bins, all mixed up. You just pick which ones you want to buy. He pointed to a few buckets filled with what looked like colorful plastic rocks from here. Steve turned back, handing him the figure back. I'll take this, but I don't know which dice I need. Do you mind? He angled his head toward the buckets. Oh yeah, of course, I'll show you. He put the display figure back in the cabinet, but left the new one in its box on the counter before heading toward the buckets filled with dice. Steve didn't dare look at Eddie or the kids to see if they were watching him. He knew they would give him shit. When they found out, he probably would act like he bought the barbarian for them and not end up playing anyway, but for now, he could pick out some dice and maybe be the one nice jock this guy ever met. Handing Steve a black velvet drawstring bag, the employee plucked out one of each kind of die in various colors and placed them all on the counter. You'll want one of each of these. Looking at the row of various colored dice on the counter, Steve ran a hand nervously through his hair. Does it matter if they match or not? He looked back up at the employee, who immediately looked away from Steve to the mound of dice in the bucket. The guy's hands were twitchy, moving across the dice until he picked up a small handful and let them sift through his fingers back to the pile. Nope, you can do whatever you want. Steve felt like a wolf cornering a rabbit, trying to convince it that he didn't eat meat anymore. He dialed the Harrington charm up a few notches, tilting his head the way he would with a nervous girl. Thanks, man, I really appreciate it. The guy's shoulders relaxed, and he finally smiled back at Steve in a way that didn't look like he'd swallowed one of those big dice that Dustin called D20s. Success! What you doing there, big boy? Eddie drawled as he sauntered up from one side. Shit. He's picking out dice, the employee answered for Steve, apparently not noticing the tense set of Steve's shoulders. He likes the new barbarian. As he should, it's basically a mini version of him. Eddie confided in a mock whisper. It was nice that Eddie thought so too, even if Steve wasn't sure exactly what he meant. Maybe that they all knew he wasn't smart enough for spells and plans and forward thinking. That smashing things was pretty much his entire fighting style when it came to monsters. Jumping in first and figuring it out on the way. Like the lake and the bats. Like the buyer's house and the Demogorgon. Like Billy and the plates. Like every time he stepped in and got rocked for his trouble. Geez, maybe he wasn't good at that either. Steve kept his eyes trained on where he was sifting through the dice, trying to find ones that matched, but also had bold numbers on them, since his concussion had fucked with his eyesight, and he refused to wear glasses while playing a nerd game. That would just be too far. He ended up settling for ones that he could see easiest, black dice with thick white numbers on them. He could even read the ones on the little pyramid-shaped one. He tucked them into the bag and swept the examples back into the bucket. He smiled at the employee, but kept his eyes averted as he stepped around Eddie toward the register. He felt stupid and a little exposed, buying dice and a character on his own instead of pretending he thought it was stupid and being forced to play because of the kids' never-ending stream of begging that they did each and every session. He didn't really want to play the game necessarily, he just wanted to share it with them, to figure out why they cared so much. He paid and thanked the guy, who blushed for some reason, and told Steve that he thought it was pretty cool that he played D&D. Steve didn't correct him that he hadn't yet. He just smiled softly back, glad that he could be a different kind of jock than this guy was used to. Taking his bag of purchases, he went to lean against the wall by the door to wait for his nerds to finish. When he looked over at them, Eddie was staring at him weirdly. Not in a flirty way, not in his usually exasperated way, not unkindly. More like he was trying to piece something together. What you see is what you get, man, Steve thought to himself, knowing he was never good at putting up a front. The only thing Eddie didn't know about him was... Oh shit. Steve ducked his head and went over his interaction with the employee frame by frame. Fuck. He'd definitely been flirting, but just to put him at ease because the guy was freaked out. Fuck. The stammering, the blushing, the quick glances at Steve's jersey. Or maybe, lack of jersey. Jesus Christ, Eddie was over there thinking that Steve was flirting on purpose, that he was hitting on the skinny nerd behind the counter. That skinny male nerd. And now, oh shit, Eddie knew that he was at least gay-ish and Steve still didn't know if Eddie was. Breathe. Breathe, Steve. Steve gave himself an entire pep talk. Don't mention it. Don't flirt with Eddie on the drive back. Well, unless he flirts first, because this could be a good thing, right? This could be Eddie's chance to confide his own maybe, hopefully, gay status to Steve, since he now maybe thinks Steve is a safe person to come out to. And he was. Is. Obviously. Of course. Maybe they could have a Russian drugs slash mall bathroom confession of their own, without the truth serum and the vomiting, hopefully. It was fine. This was going to be fine. It was not fine. Nothing was fine. Steve, listen to me. I'll go. You stay with the kids. You cannot go in there dressed like that, Eddie insisted again, waving at Steve's midriff jersey and perfectly acceptable gym shorts that showed off the same amount of leg everyone else's shorts showed off. Why not? This is basically what I wear to jog in every morning. They'll just think I'm on my way to the gym. Steve was a little offended. There was nothing wrong with his outfit. Midriff-bearing shirts were all the rage right now. He'd seen at least three other dudes dressed like this today while they drove through the city. They'd come back out to the car to find not just one, but two of the tires flat. This neighborhood was not great, and Steve's car was a very nice, admittedly douchey Bimmer. But there was no need for a random stranger to slash his tires. This day just kept getting worse and worse. Steve had a spare, but only one. He'd gone back into the store to ask for the number of the nearest auto shop and found out that there was one two blocks away, which was great, but they wouldn't all fit in the tow truck, and he hadn't trusted them to get there on their own, so now they were all walking while the tow truck went ahead of them with his car. And Eddie was trying to convince him to let him take the lead on getting the tires fixed. It sounded like he didn't think they'd take Steve seriously in shorts and what amounted to a crop top. Rude. Steve gritted his teeth. I can take care of myself. I know you can, against monsters. Did you see how that tow truck driver looked at you? Eddie floundered, trying to find words and then stumbled out. This is not the same as the game store clerk. These guys are more like, they'll be into like, I don't know, cars and metal and stuff. What? Guys like me, Eddie had almost said. Meaning what? Because he'd just figured out that Steve was gay. So what, straight guys? Because Eddie and Steve were not the same type of guy, apparently. It was like that, huh? So what you're saying is that someone like me can't go into a repair shop and expect to be respected, but a guy like you will be totally fine because the men in the repair shop will respect him. Eddie's brow furrowed. Maybe this is coming out wrong. No, I don't think it is. I'm hearing you, loud and clear. Stay with the kids, Steve warned, gritting his teeth. And then he took off running to the repair shop that was still a full city block away. There was no way Eddie could catch him, even if he tried. Eddie wasn't even the kind of runner he'd claimed to be in the Upside Down, so he sure as hell couldn't catch Steve Harrington, who ran 5 miles almost every day. When Steve looked back, Eddie was still staring after him and then back at the kids in shock. But he hadn't even given chase. Good. Steve channeled his inner Max, flipped him off, yanked open the glass door and headed to the counter, where the tow truck driver was handing paperwork to the front desk guy. It had only been like a 100-yard sprint, so Steve wasn't even winded. He knew his face was probably red and he was sweaty, but everyone's was in this oppressive heat. The tow truck driver, a big burly guy with broad shoulders and a few days' worth of stubble, looked Steve up and down, but it was not with a sneer. No, Steve was pretty good at reading people, except Eddie, that bastard. And this was appraisal. He was looking. Okay, Steve could work with that, especially since his dad was going to give him the third degree about a charge on his credit card in Indy. If he could pay with the cash he had, all the better. And since he'd flirted unconsciously at the game shop, maybe he'd be even better at it if he flirted with intention. Batting his eyelashes a little, Steve dragged his lower lip in between his teeth. He propped the toe of one sneaker against the ground, letting his knee sway back and forth as he leaned onto the chest-high counter, knowing his reflection in the wall of windows behind him would show off plenty of naked thigh and lower back, with how short these shorts and his shirt were. He knew because girls pulled this move on him all the time at the video store. Both the driver and the counter guy flicked their gazes from Steve's mouth to his shoulders and his reflection behind him. Neither looked offended. Counter guy was closer to Steve's age, and he looked completely flustered, but the driver was probably 10 years older. He looked ready to toss Steve over his shoulder and do things that would interest Steve quite a fucking lot if he wasn't so gone for Eddie. The bastard. Well, it was nice to know he had options, and that he could figure this queer thing out if he tried. It was also nice to know that if and when he was ready to move on, he could pull guys just as easily as girls. And that was a confidence booster and a half. And that apparently everyone in Indianapolis was as queer as a $3 bill. Maybe he should move here. Burly guy was a little too much for Steve's level of inexperience. That felt like playing with fire. Or teasing a lion at the zoo with the door open. He focused his attention more on the younger guy, whose cheeks were already pink just from Steve standing there. Hey guys, my friends and I are visiting from Hawkins. I drove them to some nerd store down the street, and I only brought so much cash, he giggled nervously. I wasn't expecting to get 2 flat tires on top of getting lost and the store having moved at some point. Do you know how much it's going to be and how long it'll take? He let the swaying knee become enough motion to rock his entire lower body side to side, like he'd seen the girls do. Both men got distracted by the reflection again. Holy shit, he was a fucking pro at this. Car was an easy pickup, less than 2 blocks away. We can waive that fee. You gotta promise to be careful out there. Looks like it was on purpose, and this city can be dangerous. The driver somehow managed to coo gruffly. His gaze flicked from Steve's eyes to his bitten red lips several times before Steve ducked his head and tucked some of his hair behind his ear. I'm sure it is, but it must be exciting too, right? Out in Hawkins, basically everybody's asleep by 10 p.m. We only have one bar, and it's a total dive. Using his arms as leverage, Steve pressed up from the counter and then lowered himself back down slowly. The sleeves of his jersey pulled tight on his shoulders and biceps. Both men tracked the muscles of his arms. He could not have planned this better if he'd had 24-hour notice, and Dustin and Nancy in the war room doing his dirty work. No siree. He wished Eddie was here to see it. Acting like Steve needed a straight guy to get shit done for him. Like it's hard. And I can change out those tires for you, the younger guy interjected. Then we can have you back on the road in 20 minutes. Everyone else is working on a vehicle, but I don't have any other customers. His eyes flicked to the waiting room. Oh wait, I'm sorry, sir. Did you need something? Steve turned to look who counter guy was talking to and found Eddie sitting in the waiting chairs, reading a magazine. Nope, Eddie replied tightly, drawing out the P to make a popping sound while glaring at his magazine. For weeks now, Steve had been playing all his cards just right with Eddie, hoping he'd get the hint and make a move, or give Steve the sign that he could make one, but to no avail. No progress in that direction. And maybe that meant that Steve had read him wrong. Maybe Eddie wasn't flirting. Maybe he was straight, and maybe Eddie was an asshole too. Eddie was bothered by how gay Steve was acting and dressing. Watch this, asshole. Turning back to counter guy, Steve propped his chin on his knuckles, smiled sweetly, and said, Hank, right? The guy looked confused, so Steve ran his finger across the guy's stitched-on name tag on the right side of his shirt above the pocket. He smiled and nodded, eyes like cartoon hearts. I'm Steve. Another nod, like Hank was agreeing with him. This is so embarrassing, but I have no idea how to change a tire. Lie. Do you think I could watch? Maybe I'll pick up some pointers in case this happens to me again. Eyelashes plus lip plus knee plus giggle equals swoon. Oh, it was too easy. Yeah, that would be fine. I'd be happy to teach you. Come on back. He held the swinging gate open for Steve to follow him behind the counter. Burly tow truck driver was lowering Steve's car down at the station closest to the waiting area. It was an open-air garage, so Eddie would be able to see the entire exchange. The only other person in the waiting room was an older lady knitting in the far corner with her back to the garage area, so it was probably quiet enough for Eddie to hear them as well. Steve almost rubbed his hands together like an evil villain. Do you want a pair of coveralls? I wouldn't want you to get grease on your outfit. Hank sighed on the word outfit, like it was a dreamy word. Steve bit his lip to stop from laughing and managed to answer, Oh, I don't mind getting dirty, Hank. Out of the corner of his eye, Steve could see Eddie sitting straight up in his chair, magazine long forgotten. Hank looked ready to swoon, but he wasn't making a move to take off the tires, so Steve whispered, I'm ready to learn how to be a mechanic when you're ready to teach, Hank. The other man startled. Yeah, yes, so... Steve listened as Hank oh-so-patiently explained loosening lug nuts, jack-propping, removing lug nuts, changing out the tire, putting the lug nuts back on, and tightening them. The driver had gone off on another job at some point, probably because he was smart enough to know exactly what Steve was doing, which was fine. On the second tire, Steve asked to help a few times, insisting he was plenty strong, because he worked out. Hank had no problem telling Steve that he'd noticed. Forward. Go Hank. At one point, when Steve had his back to Eddie, he bent at the waist to look like he was paying close attention to Hank's instructions. He distinctly heard the sound of a page being torn out of the magazine from behind him. On their way back to the counter, Steve could almost hear Eddie grinding his teeth. That was actually fun, Hank. I had no idea mechanic work was so interesting. Maybe I'll get flat tires more often. He gave Hank a shy smile and tucked his hair behind his ear again. Well, I had a great assistant, and since you did most of the work yourself, I'll just charge you for the tires. They're $32.70 apiece plus tax, so your total is $67.36. He scribbled the charges onto an invoice pad and tore the top copy off, leaving the carbons. Hank, that's so sweet of you. I couldn't ask you to do that. Oh man, he was laying it on thick now, but Hank was still eating it with a spoon, so Steve didn't bother pulling back. You didn't, I offered, and my job is technically the counter, so charging you for labor that I'm not getting paid for just feels wrong. Steve demurred at that and handed over three 20s and a 10. Hank wrote something on the invoice, handing it back with Steve's change and a small smile. Well, just in case you get into any more trouble, I wrote my number on the invoice. Can't have you and your friends facing the dangers of the big city without a friend to call. Wow, you really are a total sweetheart. If we get into any trouble, I'll be sure to call, Steve promised, then pointed to the car when Hank didn't say anything. Do I just drive it off myself? Oh, no, sorry, I got distracted. I'll meet you out front with it. From the corner of his eye, Steve saw Eddie walk out the front door. More like stomped out the front door. Steve hoped he was getting the kids so they could get the fuck out of here. He felt a little bad about flirting without the intention of more. Considering that he'd been bamboozled into this stupid trip to Mordor or wherever, and if he'd stayed home, his tires would have been fine, he didn't feel too bad about the discount, but Steve's inability to take a stand with those kids or Eddie wasn't Hank's fault. When Hank got out of the driver's seat and handed Steve his keys, Steve's thank you was genuine. As he slid into the Bimmer, Steve gave Hank one last wave and an actual smile before heading down to the corner to let the kids all pile in. Holy shit, Steve exclaimed as he was driving away. He was floating in the clouds. That was awesome, and so much easier. Pulling a girl takes work. You gotta pay attention to their moods, not go too fast or too slow. It's kind of exhausting. The mechanic was a girl? Mike asked, confused. And you got her number? Eddie looked over at Steve, challenge all over his face. Nope, Steve said, dragging out the P just like Eddie had. The mechanic was a guy, as well as the tow truck driver, and I just flirted with both of them, getting everything free except the tires. Why? Dustin asked, confusion all over his face. Because, you little miscreant, I didn't ask to go to Mordor or wherever the fuck we went, and I didn't ask for two flat tires, or for you assholes to get us lost and be gone so long that I had to buy everyone lunch. I didn't want to shell out $200 for a tow and tires and service. He glared over at Eddie. And someone insinuated that I should be ashamed of the way that I'm dressed, even though I had no plans to even go out in public today, as it's my only day off, so I felt the need to prove a point. And your point was free stuff and a phone number from a guy you don't intend to call based on your pretty face and ability to flirt. Eddie sank into the seat, crossing his arms as he sort of burrowed deeper. And I wasn't. You weren't what? Steve snapped. I wasn't insinuating that you should be ashamed of the way you're dressed. You did say you cannot go in there dressed like that, Steve, Mike piped up with an amazingly accurate impression of Eddie. Whose side are you on? Eddie glared over his shoulder. In the rearview mirror, Mike looked a little taken aback. I'm not on anyone's side. I'm just saying that's what you said. Why would a mechanic shop care what a customer was wearing? Stop twisting my words. I didn't mean he should be ashamed, just... I thought there was a certain type of guy who might react a certain way to seeing that much skin on another man, and I didn't want Steve to get hurt, Eddie almost shouted. Steve was gritting his own teeth now, because that wasn't all of it, and he was so tired of hiding and not being able to just say what he wanted to say. They were driving past a park, so he pulled into an empty parking spot, turned off the car, took a deep breath, and just said it. You said, did you see how that tow truck driver looked at you? These guys are more like me. They'll be into metal and stuff. Meaning they were straight and I am not, and that somehow dressing like this was going to offend them. But really, it would be the fact that I'm bisexual that would be offensive. Because they're like you and not like me. He reached under the dash, popping the trunk, opened his door, and climbed out. I need a minute. At the trunk, he pulled his spare sweatshirt out, pulling it down over his head, settling the hem on his hips to cover exposed skin, and gently closed the truck. Today was turning out to be pretty horrible, and even though they'd already been to Mordor and gotten their one ring or whatever it was, he still had an almost hour drive in which to sit, exposed and humiliated. He just couldn't do it right now. Tucking his keys in his gym shorts, he trudged over to the swing set. When he was little, the swing set was always Steve's favorite part of the park. The weightlessness of that too-high swing when he really got going and his butt came up off the seat was the best. And even when he had plenty of air at the top, he still got to make the choice. Stay in the swing and come back down, or let the swing propel him into the air and let gravity take hold as he leapt out of the swing to land a few feet away in the sand. Steve swung his legs, not trying to gain enough momentum to feel the swoop, just enough to remind him that it was there. He thought it would be Eddie who'd come out after him, but he should have known that it would be Will. Will slid into the swing next to him, starting the push and pull of getting the swing to move. That was pretty brave. You didn't have to say it. The rest of the story was enough without it, but it was part of it for you, and you wanted us and Eddie to know. Will was such a tall, gangly kid right now. He looked like a poorly dressed praying mantis on a tiny swing. Steve smiled at that, making a mental note to take him shopping soon, too. You already knew, Steve said after a long pause. Yeah, but the other thing, too. Will dug the toe of his shoe into the sand. That it wasn't the guys at the auto shop that hurt you, it was Eddie. Damn, these kids were really growing up too fast, and Steve was powerless to stop it. Yeah, I didn't want to come out that way, but here we are. He smiled sadly at Will. And now I know how Eddie feels about that. His smile turned ironic and he swung twice more before getting up and dusting off his hands, waiting for Will as he did the same. Plus, it'll give you an idea of who's safe to come out to once the shock wears off and the rest of them start talking about how they really feel. He put his arm around Will's shoulder, squeezing gently before letting go. Steve slid behind the wheel for what felt like the thousandth time that day, and for the first time, he didn't look at Eddie while he did it. Do we have anywhere else you guys need to go, or can I head back to Hawkins? He asked softly in the quiet. No one said anything, so Steve pulled back onto the road, heading back to the highway without the aid of instruction this time. After roughly too many minutes of silence, he could hear the boys silently deciding who was going to talk to him about it, so he turned the radio on, flipping pre-programmed stations to find one with a clear signal. Here. Will reached over the seat, tapping his left shoulder with a cassette. Thank God. Steve pressed it into the cassette player without looking at who it was. The Smiths, one of Jonathan's favorite bands, so Steve knew a lot of the songs. The Charming Man began to play, and Steve caught Will's eye in the rearview mirror. Subtle little buyers. Steve shook his head and huffed quietly. He didn't look over at Eddie, but he could see him in his peripheral, curled into a miserable ball against the passenger door. He'd pulled both legs to his chest and let his hair out of the bun, so Steve couldn't see his expression at all. In the back seat, the boys opened the book across their laps and quietly murmured over the pictures as they carefully turned the pages. The cassette played on. He turned it over to the B-side when the A-side ran out. When it got to Accept Yourself, he made a mental note to tell Jonathan what a good brother he was, teaching Will that everything he was okay before he even knew it himself. Jonathan Byers might be Steve Harrington's new hero. Every day you must say, so how do I feel about my life? Anything is hard to find when you will not love. pull over. I'm going to throw up, Eddie said, already reaching for the handle, even though Steve was speeding along at 55 miles an hour. Quickly, Steve swerved off the road, coming to a jarring stop. Luckily, there was no one anywhere near them, and they were all still out in the middle of nowhere, because Eddie was already out of the car before Steve put it in park. Getting out, he popped the trunk, grabbed the lone juice box and his supplies and the packet of travel wet wipes from the first aid kit. He motioned for the boys to stay, but it looked like they were still confused as to where their loyalties should lie, so none of them had made a move to get out yet. Normally, Steve would have squatted down next to where Eddie was on his hands and knees, held his hair for him, rubbed his back, used soothing tones like he would with the kids or Robin. But Eddie, making himself sick because he felt guilty or disgusted or whatever, did not negate Steve's right to protect his own heart. In the last half an hour of driving in silence, Steve had decided that Eddie had been right about him being too nice, about letting the boys and everyone else walk all over him. Maybe Steve had gone too far the other way when he'd stopped being a bully. He'd been so ashamed of how he'd treated people that he stopped treating himself with care, and that wasn't right either. He was just bullying himself then. So, he didn't squat down, he didn't say a word. Just waited for the puking to stop and handed down the package of wipes. After Eddie wiped his face and tied his hair back, Steve popped the straw into the juice box and tapped his shoulder with it. Sorry, all I've got is orange high C. It's fine, thank you, Eddie said in a small, exhausted voice. Steve wanted to cave at the fragility he could hear in it. No, no. Steve tensed, told himself he wasn't allowed to tell Eddie that it was fine, that he was forgiven. He wasn't, and it wasn't. If not for Steve, then for Will. Will needed his family's support. Steve was used to not having his family love him or even really know him, but Will deserved better. Eddie should know better. I can walk from here, Eddie said in that same small voice, not looking up at Steve. I'm not going to leave you here, and if you argue, I'm going to be really pissed off. He looked back at where the boys were all watching, Dustin clearly upset but torn. Oh, damn it, Henderson's freaking out. He started over to the car, mumbling, "There goes any chance of me getting to sleep tonight," to himself as he trudged around it to open the driver's side door. Is Eddie okay? Dustin asked, not looking away from where Eddie was dusting himself off. He'll be fine, Steve assured him, biting back any further comment. There was no point in telling Dustin not to worry. He was going to. As Eddie slid back into the passenger seat through the open door, Steve popped the tape out and handed it back to Will, flipping the stations until he found one playing popular music. The boys were talking a little louder now, forcing normalcy. None of them said anything when Steve went out of his way to drop Eddie off first. Neither Steve nor Eddie mentioned that they'd already made plans to hang out after Indy, that they'd assumed the kids would ask Steve if they could come over and hang out, and he would agree so they could nerd out about D&D, and after driving them home, he and Eddie would do what they normally did, listen to music, watch a movie, drink some beers. And for Steve, pine over fluffy curls and easy smiles, swallow a sigh every time Eddie's fingers drummed over him in excitement, desperately wish that the easy touching meant something. After leaving Eddie at the neat little two-bedroom that the government bought him and Wayne as an apology, watching his hunched form curl in on itself as he went into the house without saying goodbye to anyone, Steve drove halfway to Mike's before pulling over and resting his forehead on his hands where they were clenched on the wheel. One of the car doors opened and closed, and then Dustin climbed into the passenger seat. Before he could reach over, though, Steve stuttered out, "Don't touch me." With a shaky breath, "Please, please. Steve, we love you. There's nothing you could do that would make us not love you. Except maybe date Tommy Hagen. Please don't do that," Dustin said with complete sincerity. Steve barked out a wet-sounding laugh even though he wasn't crying yet. It broke the tension, everyone else laughing as well. After another minute, he pulled back onto the road, taking them all to Mike's where they'd stay until curfew. On the way out of the car, Dustin, Will, and Lucas squeezed his shoulder. Mike didn't, but he did stop and look at Will, who was grinning at Lucas as they shoulder-nudged each other all the way to the front door. Then he looked back at Steve with a sad little smile and inclined his head. Steve could go cry on Robin's shoulder, but he was worn out and he wanted to burn these clothes, so instead, he went home. Thank you. Mr. and Mrs. Harrington had always had certain expectations of their son, one of which was presentation. Whether or not they meant to, they drilled in the lesson that what people saw was more important than what was. It's a lesson that has manifested in what Steve knows as obsessive cleaning. Knowing why doesn't stop him from doing it, though. When everything else is in turmoil, when life makes no sense, he can clean and feel better, centered, grounded. So, even though his house never has the opportunity to get messy, when he gets home from dropping the boys off, he cleans. He wipes down all the counters, dusts, sweeps and mops, vacuums, scours the downstairs bathroom, and then heads up to do his own before he scours the spotless shower as well. Only then does he feel like he's earned the right to worry about himself. After a long, scalding hot shower, most of which was spent crying, Steve bundles up in sweats and a sweatshirt. He turns the AC down to a temperature that would make his dad burst a blood vessel. Then he piles blankets on the couch, bringing the cordless phone in and dropping it on the table for when Dustin calls. He'd brought movies home from work last night, knowing the kids would end up here at some point, so he picks one at random and puts it in the VCR. It's a weird movie, but the brats are weird, so he sticks it out. There's a kid reading a book in a creepy attic at school. What kind of school has a dusty attic with an unlocked access door? And the story from the book is really happening. Maybe? Steve's not sure, but he's buried himself under blankets, and his phone hasn't rung yet, so he's invested. This is not good. Not good at all. He'd gotten invested and the horse died. Now Steve's nose is running, his eyes are all puffy, and the fucking horse drowned in a swamp while this kid, who's probably the same age as his kids, has to save their entire universe. Well, at least that part's familiar. He cries again before the movie is over, but he laughed and sang along with that stupid song Susie made Dustin sing that the other boys still tease him about. It's almost midnight and this terrible day is almost over. All his tears have dried up, and he's halfway through E.T., because he's a fucking masochist apparently, when someone pounds on the door. Steve shoots up from the couch, gets tangled in the blankets, and almost concusses himself on the table, but he manages to yank his bat from its hiding place in the hall closet and plant his feet before swinging open the door. It's Eddie. It's Eddie, and he is clearly drunk. His eyes are red-rimmed, cheeks puffy. He's wearing sweats and his Iron Maiden shirt from earlier. He's got sneakers on, but they're barely tied. What's really out of place is the lack of jewelry. No rings, no necklaces, not even the guitar pick necklace. Dangling loosely from his hand, there's an almost empty bottle of Jack Daniels. Leaning to one side, Steve looks past him and doesn't see the van. Which makes sense because they'd said it was broken down, but... Did you walk here? He asks incredulously. Yup. Eddie slurs, dragging out the word before pushing past Steve into the house. Once Eddie is in the entryway, Steve slams the door behind him. Eddie yelps, then whispers loudly, "That was so loud." Spinning back to Steve, he covers up manic giggles with his free hand. The closet door is still open, so Steve tucks his bat away and shuts it. Turning to Eddie, he crosses his arms and glares. "I'm sure you have a lot to say, but you can't." Eddie spins around in a circle, throwing his arms wide. The only thing that saves the floor from a splash of whiskey is how little there is in the bottle, which is concerning. Steve's not a babysitter for Eddie, though, so he's not gonna worry about it. "Harrington, I can say it if I want," Eddie says dramatically, dancing a few steps back before he toes out of his shoes. At least he's not so drunk that he's forgotten that he's not supposed to wear his shoes in the house. "Eddie." Breaking out his mom voice that Steve uses with the kids when he's serious, "I don't want you to say anything important while you're drunk. That's not fair to me." There's a crease between Eddie's eyebrows as he seems to sober for a few moments and think about that. "But I got drunk just to say this. I want to say it," he grumbles petulantly, and then ruins it with a hiccup. "No, Eddie. If you have to get drunk to say something to me, you don't mean it." Steve can't stop the wobble in his voice because he's already been crying tonight. He manages to rein it in before he cries for real, but it's close. Swooping in, Eddie reaches out for Steve's cheek. No, 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 baby, don't cry, please. Steve grabs Eddie's wrist before he can touch his face. Eddie, stop. When Eddie pulls back, his face contorts with some unnamed emotion. With a shaky voice, Steve tells him, You can stay, just no talking, please. He can't fucking take it. He can't handle some drunken apology right now. Because he deserves better. He deserves a sober one, or not to have needed one at all. Nodding contritely, Eddie hands Steve the almost empty bottle of whiskey before heading over to the side of the couch with the blankets and plopping down. Sighing, Steve takes the bottle to the kitchen to dump out, stopping at the linen closet on his way back to grab more blankets. One by one, he flicks them open to tuck over Eddie. On the last one, Eddie reaches out for his hand, and when they make eye contact, he whispers shakily, Not yet? His big doe eyes glassy with unshed tears. Biting back his own tears, Steve shakes his head and whispers back, Not yet. One of Steve's best skills at family video is rewinding videos, since no one ever fucking does it. So he rewinds E.T. and starts it over, before cocooning himself back into his blankets. When they get to the part where Elliot releases all the frogs, Steve almost says, That's something you would do. He bites his tongue, though, because maybe he doesn't know Eddie as well as he thought he did. The kids are all in their red sweatshirts, biking past the government agents to trick them into not noticing that Elliot and E.T. have escaped, again, familiar, when the phone rings. Eddie sits up, blinking in confusion as his eyes clear a little. Hey, kid, Steve says softly as he answers it. Dustin's crying too hard to even speak. It's a little muffled where he must have his face in the pillow to try not to wake up his mom. That never goes well. Claudia can't possibly understand why Dustin has nightmares at his age, so she gets worried, which makes his nightmares worse. They've learned to spare her. I know. You know he's okay. We just saw him today. That was real. He's alive, and at least one of us sees him every day. Remember to focus your breathing. Find the number two, Steve says in an even voice. Every time he goes to Dustin's house, he moves these little pieces of paper that they've written 2 through 6 on, so Dustin has to focus and look around for them when he's freaking out. They skipped the number 1 for obvious reasons. There's a few seconds of muffled crying before Dustin finally says with a watery breath,
2.
Good. Now find 3, Dustin, Steve says evenly, putting his hand up when Eddie tries to reach out for the phone. Steve brings his finger to his own lips in the shh motion. If Dustin hears Eddie, there will be questions about today, and Steve's not ready for that yet.
The 3.
There are a few ragged breaths before Steve goads him into finding the next number.
4.
Dustin lets out a more even breath, takes a few more, and a little shudder leaks out of him, which is always a good sign.
5.
You're doing great. One more, Henderson.
Got it. 6.
He goes quiet for a moment, but it's their usual pattern, so Steve waits.
We got him out. He lived. He's our family. Max woke up. Everyone is safe. Vecna is dead. All true?
Yep, all true, buddy, Steve assures him.
Even the part about him being family? Even after today?
There is a different type of fear in Dustin's voice now. Yes, of course. Always. No matter what. We stick together. All of us. That's what families do. Even if Steve has to die a little inside every time he sees Eddie, he would never, ever take him away from Dustin. And he knows better than to take himself away either. There's another long pause, then...
Are you guys gonna talk about it? Because no one should treat you like that, Steve. I don't think he meant it like that, because he loves you, but if he did, we can't let that stand. He doesn't get to hurt you.
Steve knows that the light from the paused television is going to illuminate his tears as they begin to run down his cheeks, but there is nothing he can do about it. He really loves this kid, even if he's an ungrateful little shit sometimes. I love you, Dustin. I really, really love you. We'll talk it out.
Okay. Love you too, Steve. I'm gonna go back to sleep now. Will you be okay?
I'm watching E.T., so I'm gonna cry myself to sleep. Then I'll be okay. Call me back if you need me.
Okay. Night.
Night. The box of tissues he'd used during the never-ending story is still on the side table, so Steve grabs one and blows his nose. He's reaching for the remote when Eddie speaks. Wait, not yet, Steve reminds him. There is no way that Eddie is sober. It hasn't even been 2 hours. I know, but Dustin, what was that? Steeling himself, Steve turns toward Eddie. I'm sorry you were here for that. Dustin has nightmares. Usually when something is out of the norm, but sometimes just because. It's always the same nightmare, so we have a routine. Numbers I hide in his room to help him shift his focus. Verbal reminders that everyone is okay. Everyone, or me? Eddie asks hollowly, looking down into his lap. He thought you died in his arms. It was traumatic. It's not your fault he has nightmares, and it's getting better. He's having them less often. Today was just rough. Steve sighs. This day, even though it was after fucking midnight, so it's technically the next day, was just not a good day. They should have thrown it into Mordor. He hates how many times he's thought the word Mordor today, and he hates even more that he understands the reference. Shaking his head, Eddie pulls one knee up to his chest under the blankets. Why doesn't he call me then, so he can hear my voice? Sighing, Steve shrugs. I don't know, man. He does. I think it's because you're their hero. Elle has superpowers, and Nancy shoots things. I entertain them, but you stand between them and everything that tries to hurt them. And I knew that. When I realized that you were protecting everyone, I told myself that I was going to be the one who protected you, but then I was so busy protecting myself that I hurt you worst of all. Eddie's voice cracks and his hands shake where they loop around his knee. Steve isn't ready for this conversation, but it's already happening, so he takes a deep breath and lets it out slowly, preparing to get into it. Wait, Eddie says, untangling himself from the blankets to stand up. Just listen, let me explain. Pacing back and forth a few times, Eddie tugs on the hem of his shirt and then admits, I watched you flirting with the guy at the game shop, and I knew you weren't doing it on purpose. I was watching when you clocked that he was nervous and you put him at ease with your Harrington charm. But you're also a fucking smoke show, and you were dressed like a wet dream today, so that guy probably jerked off in the shop bathroom to you as soon as we left. Oh god. The image pops into Steve's brain unbidden, and he gags a little. Why would you say that to me? Eddie laughs a little manically and tugs on his hair. Sorry, it's just facts. And you didn't even know it was happening. Then the tires were slashed, and I was worried about being targeted. And the tow truck driver was looking at you in a way that made me want to punch him in the face. His hair is a little wild from all the times he's run his hands through it, and he's still pacing back and forth. I didn't want you to go in there unprotected, with your innocence and your boyish fucking charm. So much goddamn skin showing, driving me fucking crazy all day. Eddie's grumbling and pacing now, seemingly oblivious to Steve's presence. When I said they were like me, I meant they were gay. At least the tow truck driver was, because he looked like he wanted to eat you. That neighborhood is, well, a certain type of person lives and does business in that neighborhood. I couldn't let you just walk in there like a piece of meat with no idea what effect you have on gay men. And straight ones. I'm pretty sure Hank has never even looked twice at a guy, but he's probably mid-wet dream about you right now. Oh my god, Steve laughed. I think you're overestimating my charm. How many people does that make fantasizing about me today? At least 4. Splaying his fingers out, Steve looks down at them, adding them up. The shop guy, tow truck guy, Hank, and Eddie? Eddie looks up from where he's biting the corner of his nail. Hmm? In his head, Steve hears the Ronettes singing Be My Baby and thinks about Eddie staring at him over the table, possibly flirting. About Eddie showing up drunk and calling him baby when Steve got upset. Butterflies fly frantically around his chest again. When did you have time to fantasize about me? Whining, Eddie's face goes through something that Steve thinks might be what a fight-or-flight response looks like. He seems to gather his courage, though, lowering himself to the couch next to Steve and admitting on a shuddering breath, You're the first thing I think about when I wake up every day, and I am so, so sorry that I hurt you. I didn't mean to. Using his thumbs to wipe the tears off Eddie's cheeks, Steve cups his face and leans in. I think you should kiss me now. He does. They do. It's tentative at first, just soft lips pressing together. It goes from chaste to hungry pretty quickly, though. Only the taste of whiskey still in Eddie's mouth stops Steve from crawling into Eddie's lap to get a better angle. But then Eddie tugs at his hip, and Steve's good intentions take a short break. Fuck, baby, Eddie gasps into Steve's mouth as he settles himself into Eddie's lap. The hem of his sweatshirt gets pushed up as Eddie's calloused hands slide up his back, pressing into the warm, naked skin. Lips spit slick, breathing hot into each other's mouths. Steve wraps his arms around Eddie's neck and dives back in, biting his lip and moaning into his mouth. He should really stop. The scent of whiskey hits him again, and he pulls back, only to have Eddie dip down to his exposed throat, licking and kissing his way from hollow to earlobe before he sucks it between his teeth and bites down on it gently. Oh, fuck, Eddie. A whimper escapes him, and Eddie sort of growls in response, using one hand in Steve's hair and one hand to cup his ass to bring him forward, licking and sucking. You're still drunk, Steve gasps, when Eddie's teeth nip at the delicate skin under his jaw. Burying his own hand in Eddie's hair, he angles Eddie's face up and leans down to crash their mouths together again, his own groan swallowed up. When he finally comes up for air, Steve says reluctantly, "We should probably stop." Eddie plants one last kiss on the corner of his mouth and then pulls back. His hands come to rest on Steve's hips, holding lightly, not squeezing or bruising, but Steve wouldn't say no to that. Next time, though. Some of Eddie's bangs are stuck up with sweat, so Steve smooths them down, traces the lines of Eddie's face with his fingertips. The four fang scars on his jaw, the laugh lines from his contagious grin, the soft eyebrows. "I like you, in case that wasn't clear. I've liked you since we stole an RV together. I was afraid to lose you as a friend if I came out to you. Which is silly, because how can someone really be your friend if they hate a fundamental part of you?" Leaning in, Steve kisses the cluster of fang marks that he'd just run his fingers across. "I've liked you since high school, Harrington. At first it was in an abstract, he's a hot guy I would be happy to rage fuck kind of way." Steve snorts at Eddie's happy grin as he says that. "But then, all these nerdy little kids said you were the best, and I took another look. Imagine my surprise when you were actually the best." Eddie slips his fingers under the hem of Steve's sweatshirt, dragging his blunt nails against the soft skin that Steve had flashed around all day. Steve shivers, and Eddie's smile goes feral. "You like that, sweetheart?" "Yeah, I think so. I've never..." When he shrugs, Eddie scratches him a little harder, making him roll his hips and let out an embarrassing moan. Steve's positive that he must be blushing, but hopefully Eddie can't see it in the dim room. "Yeah, we'll talk about that soon. For now, we should sleep. I have some kids to apologize to tomorrow." All four boys are crammed onto one couch together, all looking nervously from Eddie to Steve. They'd shown up at Steve's door at 9 a.m. Apparently, having already biked to Eddie's and gotten no answer, they'd come to Steve's. They're confused. It's obvious that Eddie's spent the night here. They're both in sweats and t-shirts, both with rumpled bedhead, both barefoot. Steve is very aware of the hickey that is very clearly standing out among the scattering of moles on his throat. Hopefully, the boys won't notice, or at least have the decency not to mention it. There's no way for him to hide it. "I'm gay," Eddie says, finally, without any preamble. They all look at Steve, who doesn't say anything. Clearing his throat, Eddie tells them, "Until last night, I'd never told anyone that. Uncle Wayne always just knew, and I know people in other cities, like me, but no one here." He sighs, pulling on a loose thread from the hem of his shirt. Steve can tell he's missing his rings to fidget with. "I didn't handle yesterday the right way, because..." He lets out a deep breath. "I was scared." Eddie crosses his arms across his chest and gets up from the arm of the opposite couch, beginning to pace like he had last night. "Not just about something happening to Steve, but also having to out myself and losing you guys. I promise, I didn't know that Steve was bisexual." His voice hitches. "I would never have..." Dustin throws himself across the space and into Eddie's arms, almost tackling him to the floor. "We know, Eddie. You just pretend to be mean for D&D, but you're a big softy. You can't fool us." Dustin grins. "I just wanted you guys to know that I'm not like that, and I hope none of you are like that. We like who we like," Eddie says, glancing over at Steve, who smiles in response. "And that's okay, even if most of the world doesn't agree quite yet." "Oh my god, no!" Mike suddenly wails, eyes alighting on the hickey and looking back and forth between them. Eddie, no, not Steve. The end.
Where the dragons glide, they're heaven above. Out on a storm-tossed odyssey. Verily doth a saintly champion ride toward me. Through the wind and the chill and the rain, the plague and the flood, I can feel his approach like a fire in my blood.
Podfickers, end note. This has been potted as an ITPE treat for Rena Jenkins. Rena, I know you love Stranger Things, and I wanted to make something for you. I'm not really properly in any of the fandoms that you have been most requesting lately, but you make me such cool treats, and I realized that I know this author who writes Stranger Things fics, so I went to their page and found this, which was much longer than I was intending to record as a treat, but I fell madly in love with it. So thank you to the author, Artax, for allowing podfics of your fics, and also for the help with choosing the intro and outro song, because I knew something 80s would work, but I was already, like, struggling with figuring out what was the correct 80s vibe. And Artax suggested not just 80s, but Bardcore, which is literally perfect. And this was one of the songs in particular that was thrown toward me, and I love it so much. I am so happy that I potted this work. I had an absolute blast. I think I did it in, like, less than 3 days total. So if you listened to this, I hope you enjoyed. Specifically, Rena and Artax, if you guys listened, I hope you both enjoyed it. Thanks.